Welcome to the Fantasy Aches and Takes Podcast, where two physical therapists will be discussing injuries to your fantasy football players so you can stay ahead of the curve and dominate your leagues. They'll be taking the time to explain the injuries and when you can expect your players to be back on the field. As always, thanks for tuning in. And here's your hosts, Aaron Berger and Chris Erickson.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to the Fantasy Aches and Takes podcast, episode number 2. I'm your co-host, Dr. Aaron Berger, and with me, as always, is Dr. Chris Erickson. Chris, how you been, man?
Oh, wonderful. So excited to be here. The football season is getting real close. I remember there's a little bit of, it was just Thursday here, the Hall of Fame game, so getting excited. I know I got my notifications in my email not too long ago about the fantasy football in the leagues back going again, so I'm sure you got yours as well.
Any thoughts on the Hall of Fame game? It's good to have football.
It is. It feels good just to watch it. I mean, and I will watch about any level of football because it's just so much fun to watch, but it's always good to get that started, the Hall of Fame game. Not all the best players play, but sure, it's more than that for a lot of the other guys.
Yeah. And these guys are fighting for roster spots, whether it's on that team or maybe they'll get picked up by another team that's lacking at that position.
So if they I was interested in watching Noah Fant for the Broncos, the tight end. He had dropped that first pass and then he kind of did a lot better after that. But because he's an Iowa guy, and actually he's from Omaha, Nebraska, where I'm at, chose not to go to Nebraska, actually went to Iowa, which was kind of a big deal, but turned out to be a pretty good player in college, obviously.
Yeah, they had a good 1-2 punch last year at Iowa, for sure, with him and Hawkinson. Yeah. I was impressed to just see Fant running around out there. Obviously some great athletic ability. He's more of the pass catching of the two, right? Hawkinson's he's your complete run blocker, and he can catch. And then is Fant more of the, you can split him out wide, kind of as a wide receiver, and he maybe lacks a little bit more on the run blocking side. Am I correct in thinking that?
Yeah, that's how I see them. It's, he's the more that hybrid player where you split him out. He's too big to, cover with a defensive back, too fast to cover with a linebacker. Yeah, very similar to those hybrid guys that maybe not the best blockers, but create mismatches. And then Hawkinson is more of your traditional. You can put him on the line, lined up in right beside the tackle for better blocking and stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's Iowa obviously had some really good tight ends. I mean, if they had to reload at that position, that'd be pretty cool to have two guys. I don't know if I've ever seen, like in the draft, I think it was a record or a first time thing that two tight ends went in the first round, especially two tight ends from the same team round. That's probably the first time for that.
Has to be. You would think. No, it was a good Hall of Fame game. Broncos squeaked it out, very end, little toe tap in the end zone. Good to see Vic Fangio. Get his first preseason win as a head coach. But did you see that he was dealing with kidney stones early in the week? So that was like the storyline leading into it. Yeah, so he had kidney stones leading up to the game. Good for him for facing a little adversity first go around out there.
The stress already of being a head coach, I wouldn't less. The hours those guys work is ridiculous.
Yeah, that's one injury. I always tell my girlfriend, if I get kidney stones, just end me. I don't want to pass it. I don't want to deal with that at all.
I've never had that one either. I don't want those either.
No. All right. So Chris, today we're gonna be talking about some quarterbacks from 2018, some significant injuries. I think we have 5 lined up on the docket. We're gonna start with the most handsome one out of all of them. Everyone loves this guy, Jimmy Garoppolo for the 49ers. Tough to see him down last year. It was finally his turn after, I think he started about 5 games at the end of 2017, but he had just such high expectations going into 2018. Kyle Shanahan running the ship there. Week 3, I believe it was, on September 23rd, he tore his left ACL. He was actually scrambling, planted on that left knee. Going to get nerdy for a second. That's why we listen here on Fantasy Aches and Takes. His knee actually collapsed inward. That's what we call a valgus moment. So anytime, call it knock knee. Imagine somebody walking with their knees together. But if you plant and that knee kind of dives inward, commonly a mechanism of injury for the ACL. Also, I think it's like 70% of the time you also have some meniscal involvement. And that meniscus is just kind of like a shock pad that sits right on that shin bone. It just adds some shock absorption, just adds more surface area to that joint. So his ACL.
You could tell right from the. From when you watch the play happen,
yeah,
if you saw it live or you saw the replay, when he cut back into the field of play to get that last couple extra yards, which of course now I'm sure he would say, "Guy, I wish I wouldn't have done that. I should have just went out of bounds."
Sure.
But yeah, when he went in and you saw that collapse of the knee going in, you knew right away that it was a high probability that it's going to be an ACL, an MCL. Yeah, so the ACL is that bone inside that attaches the shin bone to the thigh bone. Mm-hmm. And it kind of stops the shin bone from moving forward, what we'd call translation or anterior movement forward, and a little bit of the rotation. And then, like Aaron said, that MCL on the inside of the knee is the one that blocks that valgus force where the knee crashes in. And you see that a lot in football when someone gets tackled, like a running back, say, from the outside of the leg, and it gets pushed in. That'd be a pure, or usually more of a pure MCL force. But yeah, there's times when those guys have the ACL, MCL, and a piece of that C-shaped meniscus or that pad. And then they'd call that an unhappy triad when you get all three of those things to go at one time. And that happens.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So yeah, like I was saying, the ACL tear. So if we're talking about tears of a ligament, we're looking at a grade 3 sprain technically. There's three sets of grades for ligament sprains: 1, 2, and 3. 3, you're looking at a full rupture. 2, you're looking at some significant partial tearing. And then 1 are just those micro traumas that can flare up and result in some inflammation. But yeah, Jimmy Garoppolo sustained a grade 3 ACL sprain. We're just going to call it a tear. Underwent surgery the next day.
Complete rupture. Yeah, that's actually a good point, because for the listeners, when they hear that kind of stuff, because the same grading process goes into muscular or musculotendinous sprains. So ligaments we say are sprained, and then the muscles and tendons we say are strained. Mm-hmm. But that 1, 2, and 3 grading system is the same. So when you see that, oh, it's a grade 1, the chance that person comes back pretty quick is pretty high. It's just a little bit of a couple of the fibers, a little bit of stretch, nothing too serious. So that's actually a great point to make for people who see that and they're like, what the heck is 1, 2, or 3? I don't even know what that means. Yeah, that's wonderful.
So I'd like to get your thoughts on this, Chris, your timeline for ACLs. I usually go 6 to 9 months for return to play.
Yeah.
Usually a little bit longer if you're complicated things with like a meniscus or an MCL involvement, but usually 6 to 9 months return to play. Unless you're Adrian Peterson and you're just a freak of nature.
We can't even, it'd be wrong to even bring, to compare others to that.
Sure. And that's the bad part, because athletes are like, oh, Adrian Peterson came back in like 4 months, or I don't even know.
Remember how late in the year he tore it and then was ready for the next. Yeah. I mean, Jimmy G, like you said, was what, week 2 or 3? Yeah, it was early on.
Like week 3. Yeah.
Yeah, see, he had the whole season plus the off season. He's going to be doing pretty well. I mean, more than likely, they used what's called a patellar bone graft, which just means they take a little piece of the off of the kneecap, and then a third of your tendon in the middle, in the front of your knee there, that patellar tendon, and a little piece of bone from your shin bone, and that's the most common way that they would do that in the ACL because of the speed of recovery. I mean, there are other ways to harvest grafts, but that one is the most common because of the strength of it and because of the speed of it, recovery. So those guys, of course, it's very important that they get back and get started. But yeah, I'd say you're right on. 6 to 9 months is a very reasonable time frame for that.
Yeah. So July 26th, he was cleared for full participation in preseason. That's obviously a good thing, because you can have guys that come off of a significant injury like that and they come up on like the PUP list. And that just like, look, Jerick McKinnon, we'll talk about him in probably next week. Just sure. Players that have significant injuries, they can linger, whether it's complications or whatnot, but they come into the preseason program on the PUP list, and that just seems to, it delays their getting integrated into offense and stuff like that. So that's never a good thing.
Coach Kyle. Especially for a quarterback, right? I mean, a quarterback's got to be there. Like,
yeah, it's one thing to do it in the film room, but yeah. Coach Kyle Shanahan actually told reporters this preseason that Garoppolo will be limited in his, or will not be limited in his scrambling, but must slide to avoid contact. We'll see how that goes as far as his scrambling ability. But I'm not too concerned. I'm not sure if you are, Chris. We see ACL tears all the time in quarterbacks. Tom Brady had one in the past.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I feel like maybe there's a bit of a dip in that very first year, you know, after the injury. And by year 2, they're like, God, it's like it never happened. I mean, you know, Brady didn't have the greatest you know, after that first year, after the injury, gosh, some other guys I could think of that just were like, ooh, maybe just not quite ready after that first one. But no, he should be completely, yeah, completely fine. He's not, like you said, he's not a huge scrambler anyway. He can definitely get out of, you know, more trouble than some guys. I mean, he's not your statue like a Peyton Manning that's just going to stand there and not move at all. Or even, you know, Tom, when he runs, it looks almost comical. Like, what the hell are you doing? It just looks almost unathletic sometimes when he runs. I mean, he's amazing, but it's not like some of the guys that can really move. For sure. But yeah, I think he'll be fine. He'll wear a functional.
He'll wear his brace, which you just have to be careful with those braces, because I think it might have been Joe Flacco maybe like 5 years ago. He had a knee brace on, something like that. And anytime you slide with that knee brace, you almost have to change your sliding mechanics to make sure it doesn't get caught in the turf. So that's one thing you'll have to look out for. I like Garoppolo this year. If you're the type to wait on quarterbacks, I know I am. I'm looking at Garoppolo in later rounds. He has an ADP right now of round 11, pick 12. So if you're waiting that long for a quarterback, you can certainly do worse than Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of quarterbacks, you know, that top two or three that can be taken early. But after that, man, there are so many that you can get in later rounds with such value.
Wide receivers, running backs, because you never know who's going to take off. So
I think even last year when Aaron Rodgers hurt his knee when he was wearing a brace, when he slid one time, it kind of got bent funny and had to take it off.
That's what it was.
It got all bent weird. Yeah.
All right, man. You want to take it to the East Coast and talk about our man Cam Newton?
Yeah. So Cameron Newton, near the end of last year, there was talk and there was things that it's just not right. I mean, the shoulder didn't look like he had, you know, the same down the field power and zip on the ball. Of course, after the season, they figure out that yes, he does have a shoulder injury. So what they did in that case is they will do some imaging and MRI, and they did find, which is a very common thing. Now, this is what throws people off a lot, and I could go on a whole nother rant of why MRIs or, you know, whatever, but we'll get on that another time. But he did have a bit of a tear in the rotator cuff. Now, the rotator cuff commonly would be thought of in a sense of these four, like, say, cords of tendons that help hold the shoulder in place. So you have a supraspinatus, which is the one on top, it's most common, an infraspinatus, a teres minor, and a subscapularis on the inside of the shoulder. Most commonly, the one on top, that supraspinatus, is the one that's torn. But the thing with the rotator cuff is it's not like four separate tendons or cords. They all come together. It's kind of like a bed sheet. So when you have a tear, it's like having a hole in a cloth. So when you pull on the cloth, some of that, the hole kind of changes shape, and you can see those ripples in the cloth. That's what it's kind of like. So, I mean, you can still do things with a torn ACL, or sorry, a torn rotator cuff. And many people function just fine without them. Now, of course, at his level, with it being his throwing shoulder, they did go in and do an arthroscopic scope on that shoulder. What that means, arthroscopic, just means it's minimally invasive. There's a couple little holes they punch in the shoulder, and then with these little tiny tools, they put just a couple of stitches in there just to kind of get that to heal down a little faster. So for him, he would have been, you know, surgery right away. He would have been in a brace, one of those big, like, what do we call an abduction splint, a little pillow kind of by his from his forearm. And under his bicep, by rib cage, to keep that arm away from his body just a little bit. And then very quickly after that, he'd be going into some passive range of motion where his medical team, his physical therapist, would be moving his arm for him. And of course, he would then graduate more to what we'd call active assistive, where his other arm is helping him or someone's helping him to active motion. And now, as far as I understand, he's been throwing. The strength is back. Now, that guy, too, he is a big, strong man. I mean,
absolutely.
There's just no doubt about it. And I guess I worry a little bit with him would be the accuracy and the power down the field, being that it is his right, his throwing shoulder, how that'll affect. But you know what? To me, that makes a great transition to say, you know what you should do, Cam? Let's use Christian McCaffrey more, right? I mean, check downs, little things in the middle of the field, tight end. So that gets my mind going like, okay, if we're kind of getting him back and nursing him back from this rotator cuff repair, then I would start kind of calling, I guess, those kind of plays where he's going to use his underneath. And I mean, Christian McCaffrey is a talented guy, and that might be one in a PPR situation
for sure.
He scores a lot of points because he catches a ton of passes. I mean,
he set the record last year. You know,
go ahead. Sorry.
McCaffrey broke the record last year for receptions as running back. So he's just all these new running backs. It's no longer ground and pound, right? You need to catch the ball out of the backfield. As you look at Saquon, Kamara, CMC, all these guys, they're as valuable as a receiver as they are as a running back at the goal line. It's funny that you said that about just his depth of target. I did some research into Cam Newton because just watching the guy, you knew something. It stunk to watch him because you knew he's in pain. He can't play the way they wanted to. He actually had the third shortest long completion air distance. So just a ball that he threw down the field, that was completed. He had the third shortest one all year, behind Lamar Jackson and Nick Mullins. And we know Lamar Jackson's struggles on the field last year. So that was a cool little stat that I found. Good. Yeah. Oh. But on the good side.
That's a great stat. That would worry us then for him as far as fantasy value in the, in yardage.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know. I mean, he should be, now that it's repaired, he went through the correct process. There's going to be some soreness. There's going to be some of that. The tissue continues to change, even though he feels like I feel 100% better than what I did before. The physiology of how those tissues heal is even, especially shoulders with their lack of blood flow at times. It could be 9, 10, 12 months later where that tissue is still remodeling and repairing, even though he doesn't feel it. It's just not quite, 100%. But because he's such a, physically a specimen, I think he'll probably be okay with it with his shoulder.
Yeah, I'm not too worried at all. The only thing that I would be worried about, this is his second shoulder surgery in 3 years. He had the thing going on in 2017. Just worry about scar tissue. But if there was scar tissue from the first surgery, I'm sure during the arthroscopic surgery, they would have cleaned that out, as well as any loose cartilage or loose bodies in the shoulder.
And any kind of bone, if the bones were spurring at all, they would have cleaned all that up.
They would have cleaned that. And looking into it, there was a report that the damage to his shoulder wasn't as significant as the doctors originally feared. So it could have been way, way worse of a surgery, I guess, if you could put it that way. Surgery is never good. You never want to do that. But it could have been way worse for Cam in 2018. But, yeah, I'm not concerned this year. You just worry about him falling on it awkwardly. But that's for any player. Yep. And if he could return to 80% of what he was doing before, he's once again in the top QB1, top 10 QB with his rushing. Like I'm not scared of Cam Newton this year. I know some people are, but yeah, if he could be 80% of what he's been in the past, sign me up.
I think the thing with people that maybe would think that way is look at what happened with Andrew Luck with the shoulder. Now in that case, he let that he rehabbed that conservatively. Right, without surgery, and so it can and will heal with that, but it just took him longer. It just
took him longer.
And now last year he had such a much much improved year. I'm actually looking at him as being very good this year. Now the way he ended, but that's just so this surgery should for Cam Newton should have actually sped the process up a bit. But yeah, I think he'll be on the same level. He'll be doing some good things.
You want to take it up to the city of brotherly love, talking about Carson Wentz.
Yeah. So this is a good one too, because he has missed. He had the ACL 2 years ago, and then now this last year he was like, okay, I'm back, feeling good. And of course, I like him because I used to play in college against North Dakota State, and so he's a Bison. Such a good man, such a good kid too. What a great guy. He's
all the stuff.
Very good guy.
Bunch of stuff with community and. Yeah, you always see, he's one of those guys you always see interacting with the crowd.
Yeah, he's got his head on straight for sure. I saw a video on Twitter of him yesterday, or from whenever the practice was. I think I saw it today, but I'm not sure when it was taken. But, kid, young fan of his, kid that's had probably 12 surgeries in the 11 years he's been alive and just took the time to go over to him and sign a football and all the stuff. And the kid was just crying. I'm like, you're my hero. You're my favorite player. And that's the good stuff awesome. About him.
Yeah.
But to what had happened with him this last year was he had what's called a stress fracture in the spine in his back. And a stress fracture typically is from repetitive little micro traumas over time. So I know he had a similar injury when he was much younger, coming into like his freshman year of college. The nice part of all those is they do not require any kind of surgical intervention. It's purely like one of those true things where if you just rest it, your body will lay down some new bone and heal those little hot spots where those little microfractures and pain is, and he should be fine. The only, you know, worry I would have is because he's had that a couple of times, maybe there is something, you know, like a little weak spot, you know, in one of his bones. And so I didn't find, unless you found it or know more about it, Aaron, than I saw, exactly what part of the spine it was. I'm not sure if it was the, you know, the vertebral body, which is the big kind of circular or like a column looking part of the spine, or if it was more on the spinous process, which is the pointy part that you can see when you look at someone's back.
Yeah,
a lot of them have muscle attachers. It's hard to say. I think it's probably for him, it was probably on that, on the vertebral body, with all the movements and hits they take. You can get little stress fractures along the edge of those. And of course, I mean, the bone, so maybe people don't know, but the bone itself has a covering along the outside of the bone called the periosteum. And that's where all the nerve endings are. So when you disrupt that periosteum with little fractures, that's why it's so painful. That's why people know when they broke a bone, it hurts, because that's where the nerve endings are.
Are you nervous at all? We're 20 months out from his ACL, LCL, IT, you name it. Whenever he dove in against the Rams, week 10 of 2000. Are you concerned about that at all? Because he certainly didn't look like the mobile quarterback he was in 2017 last year. But
right, and see that, and that's that sense, like kind of what I was thinking, that the very first season after a surgery, to me, guys just don't look quite the same.
Yeah.
Second year, when they get a whole nother, you know, 9-10 months to rehab and work on things, that they just look a whole lot better that second year. So I'm hoping the knee then would be, you know, fully healed and remodeled, and that strength is all the way back. And then I think said the back thing, I'm not concerned with at all. It was purely just a rest thing. In fact, going into the next guy, Matthew Stafford had, now I don't know, I didn't get, of course, to get to see their, say, x-rays or reports like that, but the essentially the same injury that he played through the entire year. So it's tough, not a structural thing where you can't. Yeah, I know. It's not a thing where you have to sit out. I mean, it's definitely a pain thing. But also, I think in the Eagles' case, with Wentz being as young as he is, they're saying, I think they may have had a hand in that and said, no, you're like, we're shutting you down. Like,
because
you're not playing. He would have wanted to, I'm sure.
Oh yeah. Well, he got paid this offseason too, and just with the back and forth with Nick, do we want to go forward with Nick Foles? Do we want to commit to Carson Wentz? The fan base loving Nick Foles. Yep. I'm sure that put them in a tough position, but obviously they chose their guy. They paid him very handsomely. They got him locked up for 5 or 6 years. So, yeah, I mean, just like you were saying, like the rotational forces, and I think quarterbacks in the past that have had this, we're looking at Derek Carr. I know Tony Romo had a few of them at one point. I think one was even in his neck. Yep. So, yeah, but this is pretty common.
Yeah, the hits they take, you're thinking about standing there. They're trying to, of course, you know, plant with their back leg and deliver a ball down the field. And the size and the speed of the guys that are coming around that could hit them, you know, face mask square in the back. Now, that'd be more of an acute, you know, injury or fracture. But if you've got some spots that are already, you know, receiving quite a bit of repetitive traumas and movements, a lot of the hyperextension of getting bent backwards with hits and in a pile can close those bones down. And that can kind of cause some of those repetitive stress fractures. Think of stress fractures more as a repetitive rather than a one-time, you know, injury. But I mean, it must have started, you know, a couple of weeks ahead of time. And he was just like, okay, it's starting to hurt, get a little worse. And of course, in the NFL, there's not, you know, there's, it's every, you know, every week you got to go back and do this thing. So
I'm sure you know this, Chris, I'm just saying this for the viewers, stress fractures aren't the easiest thing to pick up on imaging, right? X-rays,
right.
If they just started the stress fracture just started recently, you're not going to pick it up on an X-ray. You actually need a bone scan where they leak radiation and just how much uptake your bones can take in, and then they'll, like you were talking about, the hot spots. So they'll just find any marked decreased bone density or increased activity within the bone itself. But yeah, that could have played into it as well. Like they're doing this imaging, I'm sure they're doing a bunch of evaluation on Wentz. They can't figure out what's going on. Turned out it was a stress fracture the whole time. So yeah, that's just tough.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good little nugget for our listeners.
It is. That's exactly right. I mean, the regular X-ray, you know, won't typically show those kind of things. That's exactly, you know, when thinking in your head of what an X-ray looks like, you have the white part is the bone, it shines bright, kind of bright white. And then everything around it is those different shades of gray and black. That's all the soft tissue. And then a CT scan, it takes a bunch of like circular axial x-rays and kind of puts them all together. So think of a CT as kind of a moving x-ray. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, a bone scan, you know, you look for those. And then a stress fracture way, when a bone is that white color on an x-ray, in a stress fracture, it's going to be even brighter white, where you see that part of the like I said, that periosteum, where it's kind of like a hot spot. You can see where it's like normal, and then you'll have this like bright white where it's irritated and it's got these micro fractures and changes to that almost like a skin of the bone, that periosteum. It's like a layer right above on the surface. Mm-hmm. that moves and changes, and it's alive. It has nerve endings and blood flow, all these kind of cool things. So yeah, that's a good point, because he probably said, hey, my back hurts, took an x-ray. Nope, can't see anything. Like, you know, it's not broken, it's not fractured. And then over the course of weeks, he's like, nah, it's not going, something's wrong. And then the more they dug into it, then they finally found it.
Yeah. Do you like Wentz this year? ADP of 11th pick in the 7th round. I like him. Because he easily could just return to top 5 QB1 status, because he was an MVP favorite in 2017. They have DeSean Jackson for the long ball. Zach until Dallas Scott or
got hurt. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, for him, of course, it's going to be the, you know, the health issue. I mean, two years in, he hasn't finished a full season. And I mean, I really like guys who, like in life, in any job, that show up. Like,
show up.
To be successful, you have to show up. And I mean, he always, you know, has in college, and just unfortunately, whether it's, you know, unlucky or what have you, he wasn't able to finish a complete season yet. So yeah, I mean, I like him. I don't know, for my team, I would be a little bit hesitant, sure, in the sense that I haven't seen him play a full 16 games yet. But if you have, you know, that's part of the deal. You have backups for that very reason. I mean, if you want, you know, a guy that is going to, I think he knows the offense very well. Yeah. Should have a very successful season if he can avoid that injury. Cause now we're talking about, yeah, one knee, one back. Let's see what else. Hopefully you can avoid any other kind of injuries, because I do like that guy. Yeah.
Anything else on Stafford? We're looking at the stress fracture. Same deal.
Yeah, Stafford, it's basically, not knowing all of the info, I would say it's almost a carbon copy to what Matthew Stafford had as far as the rehab phase and the healing phase. Mm-hmm. He played through it the entire season. After the season, you know, the news broke that's, you know, he did not have a great year. I mean, his yards were down. His touchdowns, I think, were only at 22 for the season. Usually he's in the, you know, 30s. Yeah. He's for a team that doesn't always win, he's a good fantasy player. He's a great fantasy quarterback, mm-hmm, because he carries that team. Yeah. There are games he'll throw the ball 50-some times and throw 400 yards. And I mean, that's just – and so he didn't have it. Same kind of thing, I think, because it was mainly a pain issue. In fact, I read something on there like after the last game of the season. This is kind of painful for me, but when they beat the Packers, like whatever it was, like 40 something or nothing. So he, like, a water bottle had fallen, and the reporter had mentioned that his grandpa bends over better than Matthew Stafford. So, I mean, you could tell that he was in some pretty serious pain with trying to flex and move that spine. So imagine trying to play, you know, the full game with, you know, at the speed that they're supposed to play it at. So, but yeah, with the off season and rest and rehabilitation and his workouts and all that kind of stuff, he should be fine. He should be fine. It's not a knee. It's not a shoulder. It's not a hand or a thumb.
Yeah.
Leading into the next guy that we were going to talk about, that thumb with Andy Dalton.
Yeah. So up in Cincinnati, this is Dalton's second thumb injury in 3 years.
Yep. So he broke one a couple years ago.
Yeah. In his throwing hand. So we're looking two injuries in the same throwing hand within 3 years. News broke that he underwent surgery on November 27th of 2018 to repair a ligament that ruptured within that thumb. And we were talking before we started recording, he kind of went to go get a fumbled snap, and his thumb was kind of planted
against the Browns. Yeah, against the Browns, I think he fumbled the snap, went back to try to get it, probably got it caught in the turf and kind of bent backwards. Talk about, I mean, more than likely, it's probably the what's called the ulnar collateral ligament on the inside of the thumb. Why don't you talk about that one, you know, what that would look like and feel like with that thing.
Yeah, so the UCL, not there's also UCL in your elbow, whole different ball game. We're looking
True, yep, that's right. Be specific, yeah. That's right.
Yeah. So the UCL is probably the most commonly involved ligament within the thumb. You get something called gameskeeper thumb. That's more of a repetitive deal. Anytime you're looking at the UCL sprain, this in this case, like you were talking about earlier, is a grade 3 full rupture. If you look at the video from it, he kind of planted in the turf and it twisted. And anytime, it's kind of like within the knee, like that MCL we were talking about earlier. These ligaments are meant to check these motions. And if you have excess movement that goes beyond the bounds of the soft tissue, both muscular and ligamentous, something has to give. And it's like a, it's almost like a drawbridge. Like you can only go so far until something terrible goes wrong. So yeah, he planted that thumb in the turf, underwent that collapse and ruptured that ligament. And just, I worry for Dalton, not only because, well, number one, because this is his second one in 3 years within that throwing thumb. So we don't know what kind of scar tissue might be in there. The thumb and the hand is such a sensitive area because there's not a ton of soft tissue to kind of surround that joint. If we're looking at that joint, you can almost feel it because the skin's right there. So you worry about maybe some scar tissue buildup, any osteophyte buildup from the, because of, with those repetitive stresses of just the ruptured ligament and the fracture of the thumb, that bone's gonna lay down more bone to help protect itself. So you worry about any lack of motion there. Just gripping a football, I'm sure the boy has big mitts, but just gripping that football with that thumb, that's one thing that I'm concerned with. But I'm not drafting Andy Dalton anyway. I'm not really interested in Andy Dalton this year.
No. I never have. A lot of it's offensive, you know, style and other things. But, yeah, that's not been – I worry about the same thing about the ability to grip the ball.
Yeah.
And then that ability to, you know, to – what, you know, how many times – how much more often is it or how – that he may fumble the ball because he can't hang on to it as strongly. You know, and they go in there and pair that ligament. Yeah, there's a chance that, I mean, I'm sure it healed well, but I'm with you on whether I draft him or not.
Yeah.
Nah, I haven't. I mean, if anything, if
he could get me excited.
No. I mean, he could be a late, you know, if I wanted someone for a, you know, for a backup in a pinch situation, obviously a starter and he's consistent, but as far as exciting and someone I would use,
I'm going to pass on that.
I'm with you on that one.
All right, yeah, so we ran through 5 quarterbacks with significant injuries from 2018. Any other comments, Chris? Anything you want to get off your chest?
No, I think later I will go on a rant about, you know, how I think the NFL in general, I mean, there are other things, but I was watching something on, it must have been NFL Live, and I can't remember who the player was. I think it was, oh my gosh, one of the wide receivers maybe for – it might have been the Bengals since we're just talking about them, but mm-hmm. It was something about a foot. Like, oh, well, they'll get them in an MRI and then they'll see what's wrong. And that's like, no, an MRI does not prove or show any causality or, you know, reason as to why something. It's just a test. It's a picture in time that mm-hmm. you would take and use with all the rest of your evidence, subjective, objective, all the things you'd want to do with that, you know, when somebody has an injury.
Yeah.
But the fallacy that getting an MRI reveals all the information that you need, now you'll know what's wrong, is, I think, one of the biggest, you know, fallacies that's pushed to the public, I think, from the sports world, where because the speed at which these players undergo MRIs, people think, general public, like our patients would think, oh, I've seen an MRI, I don't know what's wrong. Mm. No, that's not how it works. I mean, it does not. For instance, we talked about rotator cuffs, right? There's, if we took 100 shoulders like yours and I that have no pain, if we put 100 shoulders in an MRI machine, 50% of us are going to have rotator cuff tears, and we have no pain. There, so just because it's there does not mean that it's a, you know, a pain generator. Also, people who have had rotator cuff surgery, I read a study. If they look at these people longitudinally, a year later, right after surgery, they are completely fine. Like, nope, I feel great. I have no problem. You put them back in an MRI machine and check them, and half of them have the tear has reappeared. But function, they feel fine. They have no. So that fallacy that, you know, that the general public, I think, gets from, you know, watching the sports, where they feel like, oh, these guys get MRIs and it shows them what's. I just need an MRI and it'll reveal the. This is like a key that unlocks this body. Oh, I know what's wrong with me. That's not true.
Yeah.
But that's where I was wanted to go with that one, for real. Just a brief rant. So
we could do a whole episode on that.
Oh my gosh, advanced imaging. We could do a whole episode on advanced imaging just the silliness of it. Yeah, but
not to mention.
No, I'm excited that the quarterback talk was great. We can. I mean, I think. You want to do maybe some running backs next week, or what are you thinking?
We're doing running backs next week, so make sure you turn into episode 3 of the Fantasy Aches and Takes podcast. I'll be here. Chris is going to be here. We're going to chop it up, talking about some running backs that were injured in 2018, maybe how you should view them differently going into the 2019 season here. But yeah, like we were talking about at the beginning, things are chopping back up. We're getting back into football mode, and preseason should be coming at us next week. So yeah, we're really excited here. I'm sure you guys are as well, but football's back.
Yeah, I mean, and grateful. I mean, thank you for anybody that, you know, the listeners, the people who have checked out so far and checked out the Facebook. And I think we got, do you have the Instagram and everything else too?
Now that I'm done with the boards and I pass and everything, this is like, I'm full go on this. So we're really going to be pushing it here. So if you're a new listener, that's probably going to be from that push. And we thank you guys for listening. If you want to check out our intro video, episode, that was episode 1. Chris and I just talked about our backgrounds, what we're into, and how we got to this point. So we appreciate all the reactions.
And really any comments, right? I mean,
oh yeah, for sure.
We'd love to hear anybody's comments or questions about specific players or specific injuries or, you know, rehab processes. I mean, of course, that stuff we're just going to just love. I mean, we could talk about it for a long time, and we really want to give value to the listeners and to the people who are, you know, fans and managers of fantasy football teams.
I couldn't have said it better myself, man. With that, we're going to sign off on episode 2 of the Fantasy Aches and Takes podcast. I'm Aaron Berger. He's Chris Erickson. And thank you guys for listening once again.
Thank you.